Let me call us to order. Welcome to this open meeting, public event, on Mitrovica's future. Jacques Klein will be joining us in a couple of minutes. He's been located at 19th and K, which is pretty close, so we'll hope that he walks in a minute. We've returned repeatedly at the Institute to the subject of Mitrovica, and I think for good reasons. It poses, in a microcosm, enormous difficulties of a type that have been seen previously in the Balkans, and at the same time has its own unique characteristics that I think deserving of attention. I can't think of four people I'd rather have, let's put it this way, four non-residents I'd rather have, though Jerry is in fact resident, than the four people on our panel today. Jerry Gallucci has been the, what did we call you, the regional representative of the special representative of the Secretary General in Mitrovica, and has succeeded a long series of capable people who have not brought the problem to a conclusion, and that just tells me how really very difficult it is. Hans Binnendijk, who will talk next, has been involved in an exercise of looking at other examples in the Balkans of similar difficulties, problems, and how they have been resolved. And I think the paper that evolved out of that activity should be out on the table. At least it will be after the event. And I regard what he's done as extremely intelligent and perceptive, and I hope others will as well. Gerald Canals, as the leader of the European Stability Initiative, has published I don't know how many papers on Mitrovica at this point, and frankly takes quite a different approach to Mitrovica from the one that I think a number of us in Washington have been inclined to take. At least I will speak for myself. I'm inclined to take a more political approach, and I think Gerald is inclined to take a more economic approach. And I regard the work of ESI in this area as extremely interesting. I'm not totally convinced, but I think it really does provide us with a dimension that is otherwise lacking. Jacques Klein, wherever he is at 18th and K, maybe by now, the traffic being horrendous out there, of course, brings to this subject his experience of reintegrating Eastern Slavonia into Croatia, as well as a long experience in Bosnia, in Liberia, and elsewhere, and is now teaching at Princeton University. I don't know why we didn't get his Princeton label onto his nameplate here. We want to start with Jerry and the situation as it is now on the ground and how he sees it. Jerry?
Okay, good morning. I feel like a fish out of water, actually double so, because I'm not a Balkanologist or whatever you call yourselves. I'm a Foreign Service officer retired with history in Latin America and Africa. But I do know tribalism, and I do know tribal conflict, and I do know conflict resolution. So I suppose that's why it made sense that I wound up in Mitrovica, where I've been for a year. I feel a fish out of water as well, since if Dan and you all are going to hold me to the standard of bringing the problem of Mitrovica to a conclusion, I might as well say right now that that's not going to happen. Probably not on my watch, for sure. In any case, before I start, just for my own information, can I simply ask, are there representatives of either the PISG or the government of Serbia here?
Serbia.
Okay.
PISG is not formally represented in Washington. I think it's my hope that every word we say will somehow be conveyed to both Pristina and Belgrade.
Well, again, good morning to you all and to you. The situation now is I'll start with the obvious. People on both sides of the E-bar don't like each other. They haven't liked each other for a long time, and they still don't like each other. After 7 years of international community rule, and I insist upon that point, not on MIC rule, because, and we'll probably get into this in the give and take of questions, a lot of people say things about UNMIC, whether it's failed or whatever. And in fact, UNMIC is nothing more than the expression of the will and commitment of resources of the international community. So after 7 years of international community rule over Kosovo, the economy is still in the dumps. Unemployment is still high in all communities, 60, 70, 80%. Basically, the problem here is lots of young men on both sides of the river with nothing to do during the day but wander around, drink coffee, and occasionally look for trouble. So people on both sides of the river still don't like each other. The economy still moribund. The ethnic situation is, of course, complicated and not simple. I did not realize until I was there for a while how, for example, mixed the ethnic communities are in northern Mitrovica. If anyone had the idea, as I did when I arrived there, that the Ibar River was some sort of boundary, ethnic boundary, that's certainly not true. In North Mitrovica, there are 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 non-Serbian people living north of the Ibar. In Albanian villages to the west, but still on the north side of the river. In Albanian and mixed enclaves like Three Towers and Bosnia Mahala, and perhaps the most unique one is Kordomini Torva, Micronaselje, up on the hill with that miners' monument on it, in which there are still several hundred Albanians living. Southern Mitrovica is much more ethnically pure, I suppose you could say, mostly Albanian. There's some Turks, there's some Ashkali. We've not had too much luck getting the Serbs to return back to Svinjari. There's a couple of them there. But certainly north of the river. And the point to make here is that if there's any more ethnic cleansing in the Mitrovica area, if there's any more violence, there's a good deal of potential sites of ethnic cleansing on the north side of the river. It's not a simple affair. Both communities are very apprehensive about the future. The situation in Mitrovica is outwardly calm, but a lot of tension under the surface, and sometimes not so much under the surface. And when I say outwardly calm, I mean relative. A couple of weeks ago, I'm sitting down to dinner in my little house in an Albanian village on the north side of the river, an explosion outside my window. Somebody gets stabbed on the north side of the bridge a couple of months ago. Someone gets shot or relatively calm, very tense underneath. And the basic situation, and this is where we are now, and it's where we're going to be even more each day as we get further into the status process, is that the irreconcilable perspectives of the Albanian and Serb communities in Kosovo come to a head in northern Mitrovica along the Ibar River. The Serbs north of the river understand by now, and I'm talking about the leaders and regular people, that, you know, status is coming, and they pretty much know where it's going, as everybody does. I can't say it here now because I'm on the record, but everybody knows. They know, too. The Albanians, they know where this is going, and where, by and large, the Albanian community in Kosovo is somewhat reassured by this, not completely so. They believe that the international community has stolen their future from them repeatedly in the past at this or that conference or whatever. And so but in the Mitrovica region, it's even more than that. Because the people of Mitrovica for 7 years have been told by their leaders that Mitrovica would be unified, don't sell your land, hang in there. A couple of months ago, their leaders made an offer which would make northern Mitrovica a separate municipality. and a lot of Albanians got very, very concerned and quite angry. Albanians who are living north of the river and afraid they're going to be caught on the wrong side of the line. Albanians, thousands of them, who have property they cannot access in the north, afraid now that they've lost the best time to sell it. There's also something deeply, I think, visceral about the Kosovo-Albanian belief, which the international community has also brought on board in its no-partition dictum, that independent Kosovo means all of Kosovo. And they are aware, as well as everybody else, everybody on both sides of the river is aware, that the northern part of Kosovo, the three northern municipalities and northern Mitrovica, have really never been treated in the same way, I'll say it that way, as the municipalities south of the Ibar River, including the two Serb-majority municipalities. Okay, so that's very quickly where we are now. What are we doing? We in the region. When I arrived there a year ago, I was given the job of opening up communications with the one group that, for some reason, UNMIC and the international community had basically kept off limits, and that was the K-Serb leadership in northern Kosovo, meaning the SNC. I started meeting with the SNC as soon as I arrived on instructions from the SRSG. By the way, the international community, as I mentioned, is responsible for Kosovo. Not all of our SRSGs have been as good as this one. And if you look at where UNMIC may have gone wrong in the past, for those of you who want to take a historical view at this, you may want to look at who was sent for various jobs and when, and see them, by the way, as expressions of the international community's approach to how important it was to fill a job here or there. In any case, I was given the job of reaching out to the SNC leadership, and into deepening cooperation as possible with the municipal leaders in the north, including the municipal leaders, within quotes if you wish, of northern Mitrovica. We've done that over this past year. We've developed good and regular working relations with the Kosovo Serb leadership in the north, including the SNC, Marko Jakcic, Milan Ivanovic. I find both of these gentlemen clear, concise, soft-spoken, and of course, sometimes they say very outrageous things. With the CCK and their regional coordinator, Momir Kasalovic, with the religious leaders in the north, including the chief Serbian Orthodox priest, we worked with the advisory board of UAM in northern Mitrovica to allow them to take on a little bit more responsibility for the running of northern Mitrovica, sort of, if you will, a little bit of preemptive decentralization. We also tried to get them to undertake some practical cooperation with officials on the southern side of the river. We had to be very careful. Anything political, they wouldn't go near it. But we did get them, for example, to work together, at least until 2 weeks ago, to establish a regional water working group. Water is an issue in Mitrovica region. And that led to three meetings of a technical-level working group. Unfortunately, with this latest suspending relations with the PISG, the local leadership of the Serb community, foolishly in my view, and I say that especially to the representatives of the Serbian government, decided that they would include breaking their cooperation in this technical-level, low-level working group on water. Nevertheless, we got that going. We got a dialogue on religious matters, including how to clean up the southern cemetery, the Serbian Orthodox cemetery that happens to be in the south. We were starting to talk about solid waste. While I was doing this, while we were doing this, we were, of course, keeping up constant cooperation and contact with the authorities and officials on the southern side of the river. We meet frequently, work closely with the municipal presidents of the three southern municipalities. I've met with self-determination, war veterans, the intellectual movement for referendum, students, PDK, AAK, all the political parties, in an effort to make sure that they know that we're listening, that we're working. The imam, who every time I meet with him, asks me about rebuilding the mosque on the north side of the bridge. a lot of issues, but it's better to talk about them and get them out. At least that's been my view. And it's also given me an opportunity to ask everyone, whatever the political differences over status, to try to see to it that we can get through this upcoming period without renewed conflict. This brings me to what will happen in the next few months. In fact, preserving peace through dialogue with all parties, and when I can get them to talk to each other, is my number one job in the next several months. And I say it this way because it is neutral to status. It is not only neutral to the status outcome, it is neutral to how the status process moves ahead. In other words, status is not my job. Obviously, what we do can have an impact, but the biggest impact that we can have on the status process is by trying to do everything we can so there's not renewed conflict. Because if there's renewed violence along the Ibar River, it could very well have extremely negative impact for the process. What we expect in the next few months is obviously the deepening of the tensions. Word is getting out, as I said, about what the status outcome will be. People understand where that's going. They're not so clued in yet onto what the other details of a possible status package are. The Serbs, for example, and their leadership obviously does not have an interest in getting this word out to them, and the Serb government certainly isn't doing it. But they have I think, a dearth of information about the status package insofar as, for example, decentralization is involved, or new municipalities, or protection of cultural icons, et cetera, et cetera. We're trying, by the way, to help get that word out, both with meeting with groups on radio, whatever. But unfortunately, neither the PISG on one side nor the Serb leadership on the other side have been engaging their populations about the details of this settlement and how it works. For example, the PISG is not telling the Kosovo Albanians that creating a new municipality in the north is actually part of an approach to keep Kosovo together, because it is. So over the next couple of months, as the status outcome becomes clearer, we can expect that there will be a point in time where positions are taken, political positions in Belgrade, political positions in northern Mitrovica, in northern Kosovo. By the way, I believe that the northern Kosovo Serb leadership is not a simple puppet of Belgrade. In fact, between us here, they're smart people, and they know that there is a political game in Belgrade going on, building up to perhaps new elections, and they're quite willing to play that political game. So at some point in the next couple of months, as we say it, when we're sitting in Mitrovica, at one of the coffee bars on one side of the river or the other, at some point some of the shit will hit the fan, and at that point in time, we will need to be in a position to try to do what we can to protect everyone. That's one of the jobs of KFOR. No repetition of March 2004. Also, to preserve command and control of the ground and freedom of movement for KFOR, for UNMIC. But also to try to keep open the lines of dialogue, because dialogue will be the first thing that we will look to try to keep the situation from boiling over. That's it in a nutshell.
Thank you very much, Terry. Hans?
Thank you, Dan. Well, you have just been operating at the coalface, and what I would like to do, the contribution that I think I can make, is to step back a little bit and provide a slightly more academic analysis of three other cases that are, in fact, many ways similar to Mitrovica. And the basis for this presentation is a visit that we made to Mostar and Brčko about a month ago, as well as a working group meeting that Jock Klein and a number of others participated in, where we took a number of UN high reps, deputy high reps, supervisors, and brought them together and asked the question, what can your experience in Bosnia and Croatia tell us about Metrovica and that area. So what I'd like to do is just run down through some of the conclusions that I draw based on that. Now, we put all this in a sort of a simple matrix, which I believe is outside. And if somebody could go out and make sure. Some of you have it, but it'd be useful for you to have that in front of you as I go through this. I guess the first, so what we're going to be doing here is looking at three different case studies, Birchko, Mostar, and Eastern Slavonia. And we didn't get a chance to visit Eastern Slavonia. We've been studying it, but we have Jock Klein here, so he can fill in any gaps that I've got. First thing I'd say is that these three cases all have similarities to the Mitrovica area. They, in terms of population, there are 100 to 200,000 people in these areas. There are 2 to 3 ethnic groups where integration or reintegration needed to be a product. They all have a strategic location, and they were all the site of bitter fighting. The differences might be that Mitrovica has basically not hasn't really moved very much in the last 6 or 7 years during this international period. So some of the initiative has been lost because of that time lag. And secondly, we have the dramatic language differences, which are different. We will assume that the outcome will be no de jure partition of Kosovo. And I think that's the right decision. You only have to look at the impact that Montenegro is already having on the rest of the area to recognize that further breakup of constituent parts will have a very negative effect in Bosnia and elsewhere. So I think that's the right decision. So if you turn to this matrix, you can see that embedded in it are three different options, and each of these cases represents kind of a different perspective. We have the ability with hindsight now, 10 years, a decade or so after the fact, to look back and see what happened. And in a sense, we can sort of look forward 10 years perhaps in the Mitrovica area to see what might happen if one of these models followed. The first model you might call de facto partition. This is essentially Mostar, with fairly slow ethnic reintegration and fairly slow reorientation, in this case, to Sarajevo. I'll go through them very quickly and then a little more detail. The second model might be called rapid reorientation. This is about cutting parallel structures, reorienting, in this case, Mitrovica to Pristina. The model here is Eastern Slavonia. And the third model you might call an international incubator. This is Birchko, in which the international community, U.S. Primarily in Birchko, basically cordoned off the area of Birchko, which was, of course, the toughest part of the Dayton Accords, and did a remarkable job, in my view, in transforming that area. So let me go through each of these. And I'm not sure you were talking about the outcome. I think it's clear that Kosovo, in my view, is going to be independent with sovereignty, but and also that there's going to be no partition. But beyond that, it's not clear to me which of these three models we're moving towards. So let me go through them very quickly. Mostar, again, this is the de facto partition model. When you go to Mostar, of the three models, this is the one that looks most like Mitrovica. You have a city which is divided by a river. You're right about it's not a perfect division, but the ethnic groups basically are divided at the river. They still have a large degree of parallel structures. It's only in the last year or two that in Mostar we have seen a fairly superficial reintegration of fundamental institutions, but if you go to Mostar, you really see the deep divides that still are in that city. In fact, in all of Bosnia, it seems to me, Mostar may be the key flashpoint for the future. So, in many ways, Mostar of these three examples is the least successful. And yet, it looks most like Mitrovica, the issue that we're dealing with. I guess the good news is that there is not conflict in MoSTAR, but the tensions remain. So it's hard to recommend MoSTAR as the right model, given the lack of success that I witnessed there recently. At a minimum, if you were to make a recommendation about which model you choose, it would have to be a MoSTAR plus kind of model. The second model, Eastern Slavonia, and Jock can tell you much more about this, but it seems to me, in looking at it, that the fundamental thrust there was reorientation from the 1991-95 period with Serbian dominance, reorientation to Zagreb. Ethnic integration was a part of that effort. We had the joint implementation committees. We had various ethnic quotas, but that process was much slower than the reorientation process. And the cost was Serbian flight. And the economy, of course, there is not doing not particularly well. So if you chose Eastern Slavonia as the model for Metrovica, you would halt the parallel structures, cut them, you would have a quick reorientation to Pristina, and it would be a major role for the international community. The other point that I would make is that one of the reasons that we had a fairly successful outcome in Eastern Slavonia is that the Serbs agreed to the final arrangements, and Milosevic did play at various times a useful role. And that would be necessary to the mix in Petrovica. The third case is Brčko. Of the three cases that we're looking at, Brčko, to me, is clearly the most successful. You go up to Brčko today, and you find a very high degree of ethnic integration, reintegration. All of the institutions are integrated from the courts to the police to the educational system. The economy is thriving. Their basic concern in life is reintegration with the rest of BH. So when you look at that success, one might conclude that, in fact, Brčko is the model that we ought to choose, and that would require a very high degree of dedication and focus on the part of the international community. And basically, again, this is the sort of the international incubator model. My concern about this is the Brčko, we may be too late to do the Brčko model. That was kind of born of crisis, and it's not clear that we could move to that dramatic a model now, where basically you cordon off an area, call it an international zone for 10 years, and integrate it, and then slowly reorient it. So while it may be the best model in terms of current outcomes, it just may not fit the Metrovica case. So what do we recommend? No one of these three cases is a perfect fit. We need to do better than MoSTAR. Brčko, maybe too late to use that as a model. And so that kind of leaves me with Eastern Slavonia as perhaps the way to go forward, but the problems there, and I think Jacques can expand on this, was we had that period of Serbian flight. And I think that's something the international community would like to avoid. Let me just run through a couple of other very quick conclusions that come not only from our visit, but also primarily now from the working group that we convened. The first is the need for a very strong high rep. Particularly true if you choose either the Brčko or the Eastern Slavonia model. If you choose the MoSTAR model, you can probably get by with a weaker high rep because you're basically sort of limping along as you are. It's very slowly building the ties. But if you want to do something dramatic, either in terms of reorientation or reintegration, you're going to need a very strong high rep. That means a strong international mandate, BH example here is that the high rep is the final authority in the theater. You need that kind of language in the mandate if you're going to be bold in terms of your outcome. You're going to need a very strong individual to be the high rep. Our look at these cases leads us to conclude that you'd be better off probably with a UN high rep rather than an EU high rep, just given the fact that the Mostar example didn't work out so well with the EU high rep. That high rep is going to need funds. And the conclusion that was drawn at the working group among a number of people who had done this is that the amount of money is much less important than the flexibility that you have to spend it quickly the way the high rep thinks it is necessary. You're going to need forces nearby. That was true in both Eastern Slavonia and Brčko. We had there were either UN or American forces with a fairly robust mandate, robust rules of engagement, and good connections with the high rep. You're going to need a fairly significant CIVPOL contingent. In the case of Kosovo, it probably means that KFOR is going to have to stay. It's going to have to move north, and that means American troops in the north. And another conclusion was that a strong high rep needs needs access, ongoing access to intelligence. Other conclusions, and I know you want to move on, I'll do this very quickly. Don't count on doing this in 2 years. I think the Eastern Slavonia model worked for some special reasons in 2 years, but I think the decade
of the Serb community foolishly in my
example of a decade or so is probably more likely in this case. Don't count on doing this too fast. Rule of law is critical, non-discriminatory rule of law, and all the successes, that was key. You need agreement with the Serbs. There has been some thought of imposing a solution here on the Serbs in the Mitrovica area. In all three of these cases, with varying degrees of success, the Serbs were a party to the agreements that established those relationships. So imposing this on the Serbs may create some downstream difficulties. Power sharing is very important. That was something that all of the successful cases had. Serb flight. We had two of these three cases. There was some significant Serb flight. That was true in Eastern Slavonia. It was true in Mostar. That may well be a byproduct. If you look at the Mitrovica area, the decisions you make about the size and shape of the zone are important, and they could be determining in terms of the outcome. If you think about the area in which you're dealing, being just north of the Ibar River, you've already drawn conclusions about the outcome. If you put that zone is broader and includes the southern part of the city as well, then you have a greater potential for ethnic reintegration. In all three of these cases that we looked at historically, the process is not yet complete. Reintegration still has to go forward, and even the most successful case, which was Brčko, they now have to try to figure out how to reintegrate into BiH in general. And finally, for economic progress to be successful, you're going to need both stability and reintegration. Again, Brčko is, to me, the best model for that. So, take a look at the matrix. Other issues will pop out at you doing that, but the basic conclusion that I draw from this is that none of these three are a perfect fit. We are probably somewhere between Mostar Plus and Brčko Minus in terms of where we want to be. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hans. Gerald?
Hey, thanks a lot. Well, I've been introduced as somebody who might disagree with the thrust of some of the recommendations that come out of the previous thinking that has been done, and there has been a lot of thinking on Mitrovica, but let me perhaps qualify this by saying that I do not think anybody has a simple solution, a magic solution, a silver bullet, because so much has already been tried. I mean, one of the key things about Mitrovica is that we've had a series of international officials with a vast amount of individual experience. We've had a lot of troops. We've had a lot of police. And the experience of the past suggests to us that, you know, just finding a good solution on paper where we assign to ourselves a lot of authority does not mean that we are able to actually translate this authority into results on the ground, particularly when there is no agreement on what the end result should actually be. big problem of Bridgeco, which is, I think, that a number of reasons why it is not really relevant. But the major problem is that, of course, in Bridgeco, the question is, who do you actually hand over once the unlimited authority, an international with unlimited powers, who is still in Bridgeco today, is leaving? You know, who will take over this role? We can't actually draw conclusions from Bridgeco for a successful transition from international rule to local rule because it hasn't happened. And secondly, the economics of Bridgeco is completely different. You know, Bridgeco's economics, if you look at it, is based on paying Slovenian-style public sector salaries and making a competition, because it doesn't then need to tax the local economy, a tax competition with the neighbors. So you attract businesses to Bridgeco, which is a good thing. There is actually behind this a little bit of a beggar thy neighbor policy, where the Bridgeco authorities have been taking the customs revenues right at the crossing, and everything that crosses through Bridgeco into Bosnia taxed in Bridgeco, and then they spend all the money on themselves. Now, in Mitrovica, you couldn't do that. It wouldn't be accepted either by Serbia or by Kosovo. Mitrovica is a dying one-industry town. And the idea that you can do the Bridgeco trick of buying off the local political elites by salaries which range from, you know, literally, we've compared them recently, they are salaries that are not comparable to anything you pay in the rest of Bosnia. They are comparable to what Slovenia pays, which is, of course, immeasurably more wealthy. And this buys peace. So Bridgeco, until today, you buy off the ethnic elites at the cost, well, it's small, so it's not a big cost, at the price of taking revenues from the rest of Bosnia, and then you have no democracy. For 4 years, we've had no elections. And now, you know, we're slowly heading towards a form of democracy, but I think we should consider Bridgeco a success once the international supervisors left, not before.
Okay.
Now, that means that for Mitrovica, we really need to look at Mitrovica in its own terms, at what has been tried, and above all, at the incentives of the different sides. Now, what I will very quickly outline is just our thinking, which is based on now over 3 years of intense research in Mitrovica, which, of course, is a very small place. You'll realize northern Mitrovica is 17, 18, 19,000 people. It's a very, very small place. Now, besides the fact that there isn't a simple solution, I think there's a second point on which we can agree. And that is, there will be no reunification of the municipality of Mitrovica. Now, I don't know who's actually proposing that North and South Mitrovica will be reunified as one municipality, and what the strategy will be to get the Serb agreement. I mean, as you rightly say, it would be very helpful or beneficial to have Serb agreement, but the Serbs will never agree to that. I mean, that's just obvious. Nor is it necessary. I mean, what is the whole point of having decentralization discussions when the one place that started these discussions on decentralization, which was Mitrovica many years ago, should be excluded? I mean, if we talk about decentralization for the Serbs, well, it's northern Mitrovica that matters. It's their only urban area in all of Kosovo, with urban institutions, a university, a hospital. There is nothing threatening about this being a municipality. Now, this separate question is how these municipalities would work together with Kosovo institutions or the southern municipality. But in fact, most Albanian politicians who've thought this through have come, at least privately, to the conclusion that this is, of course, what is going to be the only basis for a stable solution. So there will be two municipalities. Now, once you accept this, then the similarity with Bridgeco or Mostar disappears. Now, how can the international community support the idea of two municipalities emerging while at the same time excluding partition? I think this is actually not so difficult. These two things are dependent on each other. It is only a solution that not only Serbs can find themselves as accepting, as, you know, protection of their interests, but also other players in the international community that can actually prevent partition. And Gerard has hinted at that. That the only way you can prevent partition is making Serbs in the north feel secure. And secondly, of course, excluding the potential threat of a solution imposed by force. And for this, it is very clear that in a sensitive period, to reassure everybody, including prevention of ethnic cleansing in the north, which is a very complex mosaic, you will need quite a lot of international security presence. The advantage is it's not such a big area, so this should actually be possible, to place more troops in the north, to have a strong international commitment to prevent partition. But the key to any form of lasting solution is a buy-in by the ethnic majority, and that is the Albanian leadership, to the Serbs having their own institutions and their own municipality in the north. And here our proposal comes that this buy-in should be given now. In fact, it should be given before final status is reached, because international leverage on the Kosovo-Albanian leadership is now at its maximum. We have already been telling the Kosovo-Albanian leadership the outlines of a status deal. And it is an outline that is based on the idea that Belgrade will not accept it. Well, why are we not applying the same approach, which all the experts in Kosovo have come to the conclusion is probably the best way forward, to Mitrovica? And outline there, too, the outlines of a deal, but the Albanians have to make the concessions. So the Albanians should be accepting that there will be two municipalities, that the Serbs in the north will not lose what they have now. They will remain double citizens. They will have two passports. They will be able to continue to receive funding from Serbia for their institutions, as long as they are not law enforcement or judicial institutions, but, you know, the hospital and the university. All of this is on the table and, in theory, not difficult to accept by the Albanian leadership. Now, the challenge for them is to confront their own hardliners in the south. This will be the challenge. But here, the incentives and their ability to do so are higher now than they would be in 2 years' time. Because now, where there is still some uncertainty, they can say this is the ultimate litmus test of our ability to also abide with difficult international decisions and to show the Serbs that a multi-ethnic Kosovo and our commitment to confront the hardliners which exist among the Albanians who are opposed to this is actually something that Kosovo-Albanian leaders can build a consensus for and enforce. Now, this suggests that we should have no procrastination. I think a conclusion of the debate in the last few years on Kosovo as a whole has been that leaving things in limbo is actually raising tensions rather than lowering them. Well, if this is true for Kosovo as a whole, why is it not true for Mitrovica? And having an international official there, of course, raises the question of what will come after, and thereby leaves the whole issue in limbo. The question is then, you know, how do you create a good position for yourself that on the day when the international official leaves, or assuming that he will not be driven out, you will be in a better position to benefit? And I think for this reason alone, finding a permanent solution that is very clear, that is communicable to the population in Mitrovica so that they can also plan their lives at this moment would be extremely beneficial. And such a solution should, I think, and the outlines of it are on the table, it's not a secret, should consist in two municipalities, North Mitrovica Municipality, Southern Mitrovica Municipality, within Kosovo, with all the things that have been talked about under decentralization as autonomous Serb institutions funded also from Serbia, a reality in the north. Now, in order to achieve this, we should also help the Kosovo Albanians that we want to sell this to their own people. And here, and only in this context, I think the economics is very important. Mitrovica is a dying industrial town. It basically only exists because there was a Trepča mine, and almost everybody in Mitrovica worked in this mine. The mines are, you know, have been reactivated, but none of the industry around the mines will be able to create more than, in the very best case, perhaps another 1,000 jobs. And this would be very optimistic. So the raison d'etre, the economics, the basis why people are there and are not leaving this town, as they are leaving many other post-industrial areas, just go to northern England and you see towns that have been abandoned over the last 15, 20 years, is this industry. Now, people in northern Mitrovica, of course, have an alternative. As opposed to most Serbs south of the Ibar who are farmers, and have their major asset, land, which they cannot take away. Kosovo Serbs in the north, many of them, you know, have higher qualifications than the average of the Serbs, and they have public sector jobs. They've been saving in the last few years because they got two or three salaries from Kosovo and Serbian institutions. They are more mobile. So it is very important for them to know that their institutions in which they work will also be there 10 years from now. Now, for this kind of security, if they don't have this security for planning, they might be thinking about leaving rather soon. But in the south, people don't have these options. Where should they go? Albanians in the south of Mitrovica, the elites, some of them have already gone to Pristina, but Pristina doesn't create a lot of jobs. So there is a very serious threat, and it's already happening now, of southern Mitrovica already as the poorest urban place in Kosovo turning into a slum of disaffection. A one-industry town with an unclear sort of conflict in the north, and with economic decline, rising unemployment, and all the young men that Gerard has talked about, you know, frustrated. So for that reason, if we want to allow and help the Kosovo-Albanian leadership to make all the concessions necessary for a lasting solution to the Serbs in the north, we need to help them offer perspective to the majority population in the south. And in this context, an international engagement on the economic side that creates some jobs and some perspective is absolutely crucial. Now, there are many ideas how to do that. I mean, this is not a town of entrepreneurs, so even if we give a lot of microcredits, they're not going to be the Baltic states anytime soon. So for this reason, what we've suggested is if you want to actually have a quick impact, you know, there are some things one can do, and what we have done with some success, for example, in Tetovo, you can create a university, an EU or internationally supported university like in Tetovo, that might over time become a symbol of ethnic reintegration if, like in Tetovo, it offers courses in a few languages, but that in the short term, most importantly, creates some sort of perspective because it creates jobs, it creates employment, it pulls a few hundred, a few thousand people into Mitrovica. Now, there are many other ideas, but I think that the reflection that needs to start now is on how international community in this very small place can use its donor money to create, in a very short period, some sense of perspective, some sense of identity that this town is moving somewhere. So, to conclude, we have four recommendations. Move quickly to a permanent solution where the international community should get out of governance and hand over the administration of Northern Mitrovica as soon as possible to an administration that will be a separate municipality and will demand, second point, from the ethnic Albanian majority that they support this publicly and use all their influence with the radicals in the south, because this will be a real test of their willingness to fight and convince people in the interests of a multi-ethnic Kosovo. The international community should thirdly send a very strong signal by the deployment of its forces that partition or use of force is not an option and will be met with international reactions. I think if this deployment is happening, the chance of any serious confrontation is actually very low. And fourthly, the cooperation between those two municipalities, Northern and Southern Mitrovica, should not be forced, but should come about as a result of the way we use, in this dying industrial town, which has no own resources for investment, no own resources for infrastructure, the way we use our donor funding. And if there should be a special international role, I think it should be in the area of economic development, not with executive authority, but with a regional development board where the money is on the table and all those who want to participate and receive some of this money just have to cooperate in you know, discussing joint strategies. But there is no administrative international role that creates the solution that one day this power of the international administrator will pass to either side and that there's still something left to fight over. Now, will any of this work? I don't know. But I think the previous proposals are less likely to work. And I think putting this to the test now, while the international community is still in force, and while we still have a lot of incentives that we can, in front of the ethnic, the majority Albanian population and institutions, putting this into place now is the lowest risk strategy we can think of.
Yeah.
Thank you. Very good, Charles. Thank you. I personally don't believe that Brčko is the model because I worked on Brčko when I was the principal deputy high representative. The issues of language were not there. There were many other issues which were not germane to Brčko. Eastern Savonia was complex, and I'll just basically lay out the scenario. You had a Serb-occupied part of the state of Croatia. You had an army corps, two divisions, archons, people, jumping snakes, scorpions, God knows what other paramilitaries we found there. The fear was naturally that the Serbs would burn everything and leave, or leave and not burn everything. We also still had remnants of Croats, Slovaks, Hungarians, and others in eastern Slavonia. The key thing was getting an agreement. What is it we were going to do here? The acceptance by the Serbs that they were part of the state of Croatia. And there you're absolutely right that Milosevic, in a sense, agreed to that. And it was very important. Now, the Serbs, you can say, paid a terrible price for Milosevic's stupidity. But when they used to complain to me, I would say, look, my friends, when someone sows the wind, you reap the whirlwind, and you are paying the price for his stupidity. But there's nothing I can do about that. There is absolutely nothing I can do about the past. Now, we need to concentrate on today and tomorrow. Now, what do I mean, my servant friends? It means we have cards to play. The president of Croatia wants us out of here in a year. It will probably take two. In order to get us out of here in 2 years, he's willing to compromise. Are you willing to accept the notion that you're Serbs but citizens of the state of Croatia? And if you're willing to accept that, then we will fight every way possible to gain you the rights that we feel you deserve. Language, religion, etc. Now, it also means reintegration. Civil service, post, telephone, telegraph, medical degrees, school certificates. Are you able not just to live in Mitrovica, but are you a citizen, assuming that there's no partition, of a state of Kosovo? Those things are also germane. Those agreements took months. Michael Rishishin was there with me as my special assistant. He knows what we're going through. Now, the Serbs also made a mistake. They thought the UN would stay forever, and we had to disabuse them of that fact. This is a one-year mandate with the possibility of an extension for two. We will not be here forever, which means they actually admitted as we were leaving, we missed the train, we waited too long, we lost a year. Now, what did we get out of all of this? Tudjman said to me, I will accept 7% Serbs in Croatia. By the way, they didn't necessarily leave. 160,000 have come back in the last year or so. Now, it means we trained joint police in Budapest. It means that for the Serbs, we ultimately said to them, here's what you get in Zagreb. Deputy Minister of Interior, Deputy Minister of Health, Deputy Minister of Education. The Croats were willing to compromise to get us the hell out of there. And once the Serbs saw that that is the direction we were going, and after all, the criminals were gone. I mean, the first one, Zlatko Domanovic, I sent to The Hague in 96, first indicted war criminal. So the killers were gone. These were the simple farmers who lived there 300 or 400 or 500 years. So they took compromise. But the key thing was we had an agreement. Strong UN mandate. You need strong leadership. There has to be an understanding by both parties. To the Kosovar Albanians, you say, the price of independence, my friends, is acknowledging that these Serbs really are citizens of Kosovo and have certain rights within Kosovo. And in spite of the past, which some of them may or may not be responsible for, they will be treated like citizens of a European state. The price of being European is the price of multi-ethnicity. That's the key here. Now, that takes time, it takes effort, it takes donors' conferences, because money talk, as my grandmother used to say, is bigger than talk. And once you can start the economic process working, you'll see that it works. But the key thing is compromise in Pristina. I mean, when I went to Gojko Šušak and I said, now let me understand this. You really want Serbs to leave if they want to leave. Oh, yeah, yeah. I said, well, you know, some of them want to leave, but they can't. He said, why not? I said, you have a law that says any citizen of Croatia who wishes a passport must serve in the Croatian army. I said, you really want all these Serbs in the Croatian army? He said, no. Within a week, the Sabor changed the law. In other words, there was a government here willing to compromise. Pensions. I said to Tudjman, we have 28,000 Serb pensioners here. 28,000 of them. These are people over 70. They had nothing to do with this war or the stupidity of the past. Now, I would propose, since we have to change money, right, at least we don't have to deal with that, we had to change kuna from dinar, right? Now, to the Serb, obviously, kuna is World War II Stasi fascist money. So I said to Tudjman, here's what I propose. You will offer to pay pensions to the 28,000 Serb pensioners. We will pay them in kuna. They can accept it or reject it. It's a beau geste and you've made it. I said, my theory is that when we start paying them in kuna, that little grandmother will take the money, go to the grocery store, say to the grocer, I want to buy some candy for my children. He will say, I'm not accepting Croatian Ustashi money. She will take her umbrella and whack him over the head, and he will take the kuna. And that's indeed what happened, quietly and peacefully. Now, the Prime Minister said to me, I'm a dead man. You just killed me. If I go out tomorrow morning, the headline says, Croatian Prime Minister authorizes payment of pension to Serbs, I'm dead, because we're not paying our soldiers, our teachers, etc., etc. Compromise in Zagreb, and finally an understanding by the Serbs and the leader of the party was a psychiatrist who fortunately had some insights into his own people, that they had missed a train, but it was time to move and compromise now. So, as I said, but many agreements, and I have listed them here, it took months to do all of this. I mean, they would sit across the table, yell and shout at each other, is your university degree, et cetera. Finally, I would say, well, didn't you go to the same university? Or the Serb insisted, we want our hymn, we want our flag. And I said, okay, let's try to do the hymn. What is your hymn now? And he looked at me like, what the hell is it? I don't know. Which one is it? Serb's Krajina, is it the old one? So he asked his colleague, what's the hymn right now? You know. What we walked away with, the Croatian flag flies here. The Croatian anthem is played here. The Serb flag can fly, and the Serb anthem can be played, as well as the Hungarian flag and the Hungarian anthem. But strong UN mandate, strong leadership, and an agreement, an understanding that this has to be done, and the force structure to enforce it. Without that, you're finished. So let me stop there, and we can get into a dialogue later.
Thank you, Jacques. We're back to the rock face after fashion. And I think the tour has been most informative from Jerry's assessment of the current situation to Hans's assessment of the other examples, to Gerald's rejection of those examples and insistence on the uniqueness of Mitrovica, and then Jacques' experience with Eastern Slavonia, which certainly has some relevance to this situation. The floor is open. Steve.
Let me comment on Jacques' opening line. You can't do anything about the past, that's true. But we can certainly start living in the past now. I mean, the Serbs buried Milosevic. It's time for the rest of the world to bury him too, and it's time for the international community to bury him. And what I mean by that specifically is there is in the international community, I think, an extremely disingenuous and contradictory attitude about a number of things. It's all right, for example, to partition the Serbian state, but it's not all right to partition Kosovo. It's all right to hold a very good democratic referendum in Montenegro and just squeak by less than a percentage point. But when Prime Minister Dodik says, I can get you 90%, in Republika Srpska, that's not permitted on the same democratic credentials. When you go to the models, a number of you guys, both Jock and Gerald, have pointed out problems with. I think there are very, very, very significant economic, political, social, linguistic, religious differences across all of these models. And I think what Hans's working group is really suggesting is a model of Bosnia and Kosovo, and by that I mean a model of a very powerful high rep that sits on the region with a lot of authority, a lot of money, a lot of force, and a lot of power. And it strikes me that the models of Kosovo's high reps and Bosnia's high reps really haven't worked out all that well. And I think that's really what we're talking about. The traditional Western model of sitting on the Balkans and dictating to them outcomes and solutions.
Others? Come now, this is a controversial subject. I'm sure there are a lot of views in the room. Thanks.
Your suggestion from the Embassy of Serbia. I just wanted to point out one thing that seems to me obvious, and that the problem of Kosovska Mitrovica seems to be the problem of a perception that this is the nucleus of a future partition of Kosovo. So everybody is approaching that issue from that perspective and then ignoring the perspective of those people living there. And why to speak of multi-ethnicity in Kosovska Mitrovica and not to speak in the same way of ethnicity in Pristina, Prizren, mm-hmm. Pić, cities where you have Serbs that are hundreds or less than 100 city after they left and after they have lived there for hundreds of years, numbering thousands. So this is my question. Why not adopt the same model that you're proposing for creating a multi-ethnic Kosovska Mitrovica? I'm not aware of how many Albanians have left, seven, the northern Mitrovica. But it seems to me that the issue should be, the priority should be Pristina, Prizren, and Pécs, and returning Serbs into those cities, and then that confident level of confidence risen by from the perspective of Serbs, we need to see what should be the solution for Novi.
Please, go ahead, Joe.
You know, that's the same old Belgrade line. And I understand why you're doing it, because this is a status process. But to insist on returns before dealing with Mitrovica means you never deal with Mitrovica. It's obvious to everybody on the ground that returns, there's been none, almost none. It's not worked. And it's therefore not going to work in the next 3, 4, 5, or 6 months of the status process. So please get off that horse. Returns have to happen in a stable, peaceful situation in which everyone can see the new Kosovo working. So returns, if they're going to happen, if people are going to voluntarily choose to go back to these places, logically and in reality, and this is the ground perspective, are only going to happen when people can see, aha, the new post-status Kosovo does not mean the end of the world. Aha, there's decentralized municipalities. There are new Serb municipalities in the south, and there's the option of creating even new ones or taking over municipalities as people move back. To insist that there be returns before we deal with the question of Northern Mitrovica, I'm sorry, as a colleague, I say it strikes me much more as a political position than a real contribution to a solution. In fact, I have to say that it would be wonderful if the Serbian government found the time to stop playing politics with Kosovo and work with the international community while we are there, while the process is still ongoing, so that the lives and both in the future and the present of the Serb community in Kosovo right now can be better served. This thing about not participating, I understand some of that. But there are various levels of participation. There are various ways to take part. I believe that, as Gerald has pointed out, a good way for the Albanians to challenge you all would be to go ahead and offer a new municipality in Northern Mitrovica now. I think that would be a good challenge, and it would actually give a lot of people who right now are playing political games something useful to do.
Please.
Before I ask General Klein a question, I would like just to comment on what Adoma says about a possible referendum in Srpska. In 92, over 60% of Bosnian citizens voted for independence, and regardless of that, side that Mr. Dodik belonged to started war, and Srpska was created on a different
basis. Can you introduce yourself to
I apologize. My name is Andrej Pustinović. I'm working as an intern at a Bosnian embassy. Regardless of that, so Montenegro has a different basis for their independence than Srpska would possibly have. As he mentioned before, there was an initiative in the Republic of Srpska for referendum for independence, because Montenegro has it and Kosovo probably will. What is your position on it, and what legitimacy they do have?
Well, it's too late now, unfortunately, to do all of this. This could have been done, you know, years ago, but I'm afraid it's over. But you have a valid point, and Dodik has made the point to me when I was in the office of the High Rep. If there is a Wilsonian democratic principle that says each citizen has a right, basically, at some point, to vote in a plebiscite, whether it's in the Saarland or in eastern Silesia or in Alsace-Lorraine, where I'm from, or anywhere else, why don't we? And I think the consensus among the European powers was that there will be a Bosnia-Herzegovina. It will, whether the Croats or Serbs like it or not, it will be a state. Yeah. That's the answer. There is hope, however. In Vukovar today, as you know, Branimir Glavaš was the Župan of eastern Slavonia. He was one of the perpetrators of the war, actually, as you know. He was so hardline, he was thrown out of the HDZ about 2 years ago. But he won the election in eastern Slavonia, and today is allied with the most hardline Serb radicals in Vukovar, and they govern the city together. So there is hope.
Please.
Barry Wood, Voice of America. I would like to ask your perspectives on the next few weeks, because it seems that things are moving pretty quickly, and these very useful suggestions don't see much action in implementing. First, what about the military situation in the North? Do the Americans have to have some kind of international agreement through K-4 for the Americans to replace the French moving into the North? That's one. Number two, when Mr. Knaus speaks of now is the time to exert maximum pressure on the Albanians, I don't see any of that happening. I don't see that in Vienna with negotiations, and now there's some talk of the big elephant round coming in late July. And then finally, when, Mr. Klein, you speak of the essential requirement of a strong agreement, I don't see a strong agreement coming. Mm-hmm. I don't see strong leadership. And we don't see a strong mandate for any of these things happening.
Let me take the first. I should have said this perhaps at the outset, the situation on the ground in terms of security. First of all, let me clarify that K4 has never left the North. K4 did close its last fixed locations in north of the Ebar late last year. This is true. And I believe that was an error. That was premature. Nevertheless, K4, the Task Force Northeast.
One can do, and when we have done, there's some success. For example, in Tetovo.
Goals. Because not having to tie down some assets in fixed locations means you could put more out there. And when cross-boundary exercises take place, when other K4 commands send companies north, for example, to get to know the terrain, they go north of the Ebar. So K4 has not by any means abandoned the north. And 2 weeks ago, I believe it was, a new camp in Leposavić was opened up for rotational additions from outside our area, from K4 forces that rotate in and out of there every 2 weeks. Now, I insisted at the outset that this be the international community be held responsible for this. I can't say too much about this because it's not my job, but I can say I have seen no evidence whatsoever so far of any NATO country or non-NATO country plussing up the troops in Kosovo so that there would be extra to send to the north, which means the basic decision for anybody wishing to send more troops to the north is taking them out of the present hide. So that's a decision that has not been made yet. And should violence break out in Kosovo, it will be a problem everywhere. Pressure on the Albanians. It's obvious for anybody who's been watching the Albanians make their presentations in Vienna, they have responded very positively to the expectations of the international community upon them. They made a proposal on northern Mitrovica. They understand quite well it's an opening position. They understand quite well that at the end of the day it will have to be a freestanding municipality with all of the authorities of any municipality. They didn't open with it. But their proposals and the mediators taking of them a few steps forward, I think it may be possible to pressure the Albanians to do more. But I think, in fact, if you look at this, you'll see the Albanians have been responding quite well so far to the expectations of the international community.
Yeah. Please, Hans.
Two things. First, on the military K4 point, the question was, do we need to replace the French? No. I do think we need to augment a bit. And K4 is moving in the direction of I think they may already be there, a task force approach, which would allow forces to move throughout Kosovo much more freely. To me, that makes a lot of sense to give flexibility. I don't think we need more than 17,000 or 16, wherever we are now, 1,000 K4 troops. That's plenty, as long as they have the right mandate. You could probably do it with less. The key thing is we've gotten beyond most of the national caveats. We have pretty good rules of engagement. We do need some Americans up north of the river, and I think with the task force approach, we're going to do that. My understanding is the United States has agreed to keep the current level of forces in K4. That's a good decision. Now, on the number of comments that have been made, let me put it this way. MOSTAR is kind of, as a model, is a default position. If you don't do much, that's where you're going to end up, and that's where I think our European...
Minus the money.
minus the money. But it, you know, it is in a sense the easy solution. The problem with it is that you go back 10 years later and you find tremendous problems. So if it is the easy solution, you don't need, if that is the default solution, if that's where you're going to take it, you don't need as significant an international contribution. You don't necessarily have to have that strong supervisor. But you will come back in 10 years and you will find in the Mitrovica area the same set of problems or very similar. And so what have you accomplished in the decade? So that's my concern about, I think, where you were taking us in your comments, Gerald.
Mike Jages.
Yes, thank you. Mike Jages from the U.S. Institute of Peace. There seems to be a consensus, in spite of all the different models here, that there will need to be a continuing international security presence. But the nature of the problem that that presence would confront would be more along the lines of civil disturbances, I think in the extreme case, the March 2004 riots, the kind of thing that would be troubling, but there were entities called the Bridge Watchers there. I don't know to what extent that still is a problem, but there are linkages with organized crime, transnational criminal activity, the use of political violence. The point I'm trying to make is that the typical kind of NATO presence is perhaps not the most appropriate kind of force to deal with something that has more of a criminal character and a character of civil disturbances that require proficiency and non-lethal kind of use of force, and then the ability to deal with the perpetrators. So my question is, what in addition to an international military presence would be required? I guess Gerald is the one who would like to see authority turned over to a Serb administration, but what role would be required by the international community to be involved in policing and in adjudication of disputes? Who is going to be taking the cases of inter-ethnic violence?
Gerald?
Yes. Well, three quick points also answer this one, but to begin with Mostar. Suggestion that, you know, we didn't do much in Mostar, and then after 10 years, there's still a problem. I don't think that's really relevant to Mitrovica, because what we are suggesting is to address the problem head-on, to get the Kosovo side to accept that there will be two municipalities, and to proceed now with building the municipality in the north, and then the problem is solved. All these other issues, many of which Jacques outlined, you know, have already been addressed or need to be addressed further in the context of the status talks. People in the north are paid from the Kosovo budget. You know, the teachers there, I mean, now there is political games about refusing to accept some of this money. This will not last very long, I'm quite convinced, knowing the household budget situation in the north. People in the north have been paid pensions from the Kosovo budget. I mean, people in northern Mitrovica have been paid, you know, benefits for being on the payroll of Trepča. I mean, much of this, and many of these questions don't concern Mitrovica alone. They concern Serbs throughout Kosovo. Serbs, yeah. You know, you want Kosovo Serb schools in the south, whether they're in villages in Gjilan, you know, they also depend on relations with Serbia, because that's where they get the school books from. You know, for you will not create Kosovo Serb curricula with for a population of perhaps 120,000 people. So many of these practical issues have been addressed, will continue to be addressed in the status process. But if the basic structure of these two municipalities is settled now, we are not in a Mostar situation. Because in Mostar, we are in a situation where we said, we want this city unified, and then we didn't think hard enough how to do it. So obviously, 10 years later, we discover it's not unified.
So you want it divided in perpetuity?
No, not divided. Have two municipalities. Have two municipalities.
We actually did decide the structure of the Mostar municipality at Dayton.
Yes, and then we changed.
I would describe it as divided rather than united.
Yes.
But we did. There were to be six municipalities in Mostar, three Croat and three Bosniak. But nothing about deciding that affected the situation on the ground in
good fences make good neighbors.
Please. Could I address Mike's point just real quickly? Mike, I agree. We need a significant CIVPOL capability there now, perhaps even more than before, given the turmoil that could well follow final status. But I would not use that as an argument to reduce the KFOR numbers, because the prospect for significant flare-ups are there, and that CIVPOL capability needs KFOR there as a backup. So I think it'd be sending all the wrong signals at this critical point if we reduce the KFOR numbers.
Gerald, you weren't quite finished, I think, before.
Yes, there's one more point. Is about this assumption that by just putting a high rep with unlimited powers, we'll be able to get our way in impossible. I mean, we've tried that. The UN has had a lot of powers. I mean, unlimited on paper. And the reason, you know, it hasn't been, you know, just using these powers has to do with the fact that Kosovo is somewhat different to Bosnia. I mean, in Bosnia, there was just recently a conference, a party congress of the SDA, the biggest party, you know, passing a resolution that we want the high rep to stay. You know, in Bosnia, you have, there's this whole tradition of people saying, we want our new Tito to help us moderate, you know. You don't have this situation in Kosovo. I mean, in Kosovo, the Kosovo Albanians are not going to accept international impositions once they have their status resolved. And so now one of the problems there is that we need to leverage our authority very carefully. Now, we want to have authority. We will have authority. Just like in Macedonia, if a Macedonian politician now runs aggressively on partitioning the country, you know, there are ways in which both the U.S. ambassador and Mr. Solana and the German ambassador and others, you know, will be using some very real means of influence. But the idea of just assigning ourselves powers on paper, and in Mitrovica in particular, this hasn't worked. You know, there is a reason why Gerard and his predecessors haven't just gone in there and cleaned out the city. You know, I mean, it's not that they haven't thought of it.
No, I think about it every day.
Thank you. I'm Michael Hrishishin from the U.S. Agency for International Development, and I want to say that this morning I think we've had an excellent discourse on the challenges of Mitrovica, and a couple of key points were made. First, that an agreement is absolutely necessary in order to be successful in the process. And then secondly, you need to develop a security environment that will be conducive to economic reconstruction. And in that regard, we're finding on an increasing basis that until you create economic regeneration, it is difficult to achieve political stability. My question for the panel is, in the case of Mitrovica, do you have any specific recommendations for how to do that? I would simply preface that by saying that in Brčko, I agree with Gerald's analysis. Yes, it is the customs revenue and the large influx of money that created prosperity in Brčko. And in Eastern Slavonia, when Ambassador Klein was able to get commitments from the Croatian government to pay pensions and to bring money and structure in, that helped stabilize the situation considerably. But do we have any specific ideas or suggestions for how we would create economic regeneration to help overcome some of the political and reconciliation problems?
Kosovo's economic problems are Kosovo-wide. And the need to find something for Kosovo to do to make a living is Kosovo-wide. Mitrovica, after all, used to supply wealth for much of Yugoslavia and certainly not just for Kosovo. So the failure of industry to have a future in Mitrovica is a Kosovo-wide problem. And the need for investment in infrastructure in Kosovo is huge, whether it's electrical or water. And this also has economic decentralization elements. I think it's fair to say that the international community has wasted 7 years in this regard, and specifically in the north, there has been almost no attention by the international community, by the contact group countries or anybody, on the north. When it came to northern Kosovo, Mitrovica as a whole, the people in Pristina, who, you know, frankly, I have to say, live in what is pretty much a mono-ethnic enclave at this point, failed to look north and failed to understand that the north was different, failed to invest or have money in the north. There's been a few exceptions. Recently, we've been trying to get the donor community to focus on giving us some money for quick impact projects so people can do useful things these next few months. We came up with a list of 650,000 euros worth of projects and are still begging our way around the international community trying to find the money. So the international community's money has not been where its mouth is on northern Kosovo for quite some time. Hopefully that'll change. So in the short term, some money. In the long term, I think Gerald is right. Mitrovica could become a university town. Northern Mitrovica could become a service center for the Serbian population of Kosovo. if it has the ability to keep connections to Serbia, et cetera, it can play that role, whether it's on education or whatever. I think tourism, niche tourism, has a future. I think environmental cleanup. This is going to take outside investment because who's going to pay for that? But all the lead in the Mitrovica region, and there's lots of lead. Mitrovica, people shouldn't live in Mitrovica, really. It's that bad. All of that goes into the Ibar, which flows down eventually to the Danube. So this is a big downstream issue. So there should be money for environmental cleanup. So environmental cleanup is a possibility. Tourism. Trepša can probably employ more than 1,000 people if you take the pieces of it, the mining pieces, the battery recycling plant, which is finally up and going. I think there are ways, but yeah, and maybe, who knows, an economic free zone approach for Mitrovica. You can't replicate everything Brčko did, but maybe a piece of it.
Hans?
Just going to touch on that great point. When we were in Brčko, we visited the Arizona market there, which to me was a great example of a case where once you have a degree of ethnic integration and stability, the private sector can take over. So, yes, foreign aid would be very useful, but what we found there at the Arizona market was a magnet for people from all over the area to come and buy. It has been a tremendous income generator. The folks who own the Arizona market have plans to build a very similar operation in Kosovo, in Mitrovica. I saw the plans. But just one example of a way in which stability and ethnic integration can bring investment to your area.
Shat?
The concept of separate communities, separate municipalities, and that, again, not new. If you examine Eastern Slavonia more carefully, you'll find that there are several places there, Vinkovci and other places, where we could not get agreement, language, and a whole range of things, and the war itself. So we created a separate municipality, temporarily. That may last 10, 15, 20 years. Who knows? They may reunite over time, if you follow me. But for that, at that point in time, it seemed to be the logical thing to do. Create a separate municipality, put up your Cyrillic street signs, et cetera, but let's move on. Let's get on with it. And eventually trade, commerce, as I'll point out, those kind of things then re-energize and reinvigorate and reunite, but it takes time.
Yeah.
Two quick points. First, I think that the image of Mitrovica is really a place where traditionally Albanians and Serbs have hated each other the most, I think is a mistake. It's wrong. It's a post-war image. I mean, this has been a place where a much larger number of Serbs that, you know, we've done a lot of research there, and there is quite a large number of Serbs, the elder generation, who spoke some Albanian. And the reason is obvious. This is a socialist town. I mean, until the crisis of Kosovo's economy in the 80s, this was a town where people had some real local pride. And this is still there. I mean, we did a documentary, which was then shown on television in Serbia and in Kosovo, you know, where we just interviewed people on both sides of the Ibar. And, you know, there is still a lot of common memories. And the fact that in the north you have all these Albanians living there in a very small community is a sign that it is actually, even now, it's not just dreaming that people, you know, might live side by side again. They are doing it right now. So once Mitrovica loses this frontline status, and I think the key to this is to remove all uncertainty about what is still to be played for. Once this stops being, you know, a possible area of division, I think people will get on there as much as in any town in Bosnia where we had horrible events and then had seen reconciliation. And Mostar is, of course, the negative example in Bosnia. I mean, many other places are much more positive. On the economics, just one sentence. I still find it amazing how little attention is being paid to this.
Economic.
And I totally agree with what Gerard said. It's a Kosovo-wide problem. It's also a Mitrovica problem because it's one of the poorest places in Kosovo. But considering how much the international presence will cost us in Kosovo over the next few years, whatever model is chosen, the complete neglect of, you know, any sort of longer-term thinking on economics is really striking. And I fear that we will have, and this is not the issue topic to discuss here now, it's a different one. We will be publishing reports on the crisis in the Kosovo countryside very soon, where we've done a lot of research the last few years. And there is a social time bomb ticking there. I mean, incomes have fallen dramatically over the last 2 years in the countryside, as people have been pushed out of Germany, returned, no longer send money and remittances. Kosovo is economically and socially really a very unstable place. And I think the lack of attention to this is really quite striking. And in Mitrovica, you know, if we would have paid a little bit more attention to the bits of Trepča that could be revived. Now, there has been some effort, you know, when Paul Nellis came in as a manager of Trepča. You know, he was there as a top manager. He hasn't been visited by an SOSG in a year. You know, it's 45 minutes drive from Pristina. You know, all these legal issues, they would need to be worked out. There should be a team of 5 lawyers just working on sorting out the legal issues for Trepča. But in fact, it's always the threat of bankruptcy and people marching on the streets that drives us to do things. You know, again, what you say, you know, we can make recommendations, but it's true that on these points, very little is happening.
Before I conclude with a few remarks, does anyone else on the panel want to add anything? I would only say in concluding that I'm struck by the degree to which today, unlike 15 years ago, we have quite a bit of experience. And what seems to me to be lacking now is not so much experience and models, but will. And I want to give 2 specific ideas that I think could be carried forward today in Mitrovica that would be helpful. Some of you have heard this from me before. Jack Klein, when he was in Bosnia, did more to establish freedom of movement by removing ethnic identification from license plates than any other single act. We still have ethnic identification of license plates in Kosovo.
Give me 5,000 troops and I'll deal with it.
No, you don't need 5,000 troops.
Drive.
You don't drive unless you
anything
use...
Anything you haven't done in the 7 years of Kosovo right now, this is the wrong time to try it in the status process.
I still offer it as an idea. I think it's a clear violation of 1244 that UN authority in Kosovo is not recognized by the Serb community. It would enable Albanians to travel in Serb-held areas, Serbs to travel in Albanian held areas much more safely than I can today. The other idea is an idea for the future, but one that I think should start today and is consistent with this university idea, and that is that the language problem is serious in Kosovo, unlike Bosnia. And the only solution to it is a common language, and the only conceivable common language is English. And we should be building a school system that offers education in English to both Serbs and Albanians, and you'll see an integrated school system in Mitrovica and elsewhere in Kosovo very, very soon because of the economic advantages of speaking good English. So with those 2 heretical ideas, I draw us to a close and thank the panel very much. Outside of